Good evening and welcome to By the People Election 2004 on WILL-TV. I'm John Paul. As we sit here tonight, the countdown is on. 106 hours is all that's left till the start of voting. By late Tuesday night, maybe Wednesday morning, we may know if the United States has re-elected George W. Bush or whether voters will be sending a new man, Senator John Kerry, to the White House. Tonight, our discussion is a presidential roundtable. We'll be talking about the battle for the presidency, especially from an Illinois perspective. Our guest tonight, representing the Bush campaign in Illinois, U.S. Representative Ray LaHood from Peoria, a Republican. The John Kerry campaign representative here tonight is Avis Lavelle. She is joining us from Chicago and has come down through the fog. Thank you. We also have two presidential scholars with us tonight, political scientists from the University of Illinois. First, Professor Peter Narduli, who has recently completed research about the Electoral College dating back to the presidency of John Adams. And Professor Scott Althaus, who has been monitoring the presidential race from a media marketing standpoint, keeping an eye on the polls and voter habits. Now, we also want you to be a part of tonight's discussion. WILL invites you to head to the telephone and call to join into the discussion tonight to ask these experts your questions about the race for the presidency. Our phone number, 217-333-3495. You'll see the number at the bottom of the screen from time to time to remind you. And now I want to give you a look at some recent presidential election history in Illinois. Since 1972, Illinois has voted for the winning presidential candidate 6 of 8 times, 75% of the time. From Richard Nixon's election in 1972 through 2000, only 2 candidates have won Illinois but lost the presidency. That'd be Gerald Ford and Al Gore. You'll also note there was a Democratic turn in Illinois beginning in 1992 with the first Clinton presidency. Well, what might all that history mean for next week's election in Illinois? Time to find out. Let's turn first and ask any of you what you read into that kind of history in Illinois, that recent 30-some-year history in Illinois. Professor Narduli, what do you read into that?
Well, the Republicans have, Illinois has been a Republican stronghold for a long time. They, throughout the latter part of the 19th century, they moved into the Democratic column a little bit into the New Deal era, but with the election of Dwight Eisenhower, they were pretty consistently Republican, except for 1916-64, until Bill Clinton's election. So yeah, they have been a Republican stronghold for quite a while, but like most of the Northeast and states outside the South and the West, they have been trending Democratic since about 1976 to 1980. So certainly the long-term trends favored the Democrats in Illinois and much of the Northeast and Midwest.
Ms. Lavelle, every poll in the state I've seen has said John Kerry's going to win Illinois. Based on that history that you see in Illinois in the past 30 years and what you see in the polls, what do you expect next week?
I think that John Kerry will certainly win Illinois. I think that the Democratic voter is motivated. You know, there were, you noted in 60 and 64, the Kennedy election, that was a motivator. There are some candidacies or some sets of circumstances that motivate the base vote of the Democratic Party to really come out. And I think this will be one of those years.
Representative LaHood, is the Bush campaign written off Illinois?
Oh, a long time ago.
Is there a chance? Is there a chance?
A long time ago. Absolutely. You know, in the last campaign, President Bush, immediately after the convention, took a train ride, started in Joliet, this is when he was Governor Bush, stopped in Bloomington, stopped in Lincoln, and stopped in Springfield. Then candidate Cheney came to Peoria the weekend before the election. We had a big rally on the riverfront in Peoria. We saw him a lot during the last campaign, but they lost the state by 12 points, got killed in Chicago 5-1, even though they carried an area like we're in this evening. And everything is done by polling, and that's the reason you see them in Florida, Michigan, Ohio.
What's happened in that four-year time period in the state?
A change of demographics in Illinois. I mean, if you look at what was one time the largest Republican county in the state, DuPage County, the largest Republican county in the country, DuPage County, the demographics have changed there. A lot of people have moved out. A lot of Democrats have moved into the suburban area, to the so-called collar counties. A lot of people have moved out of Illinois. We've gone from At one time, 24 congressmen down to 19 congressmen. People have moved out of the state. People have moved from traditional Democratic areas into traditional Republican areas, and the demographics of the state have changed dramatically.
So there's no chance of a Bush surprise in Illinois.
Absolutely not.
Just not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
You know what I think is very interesting about this whole thing, though, is that there has been no more attention to this state by the Democrats than there has been by the Republicans. So, you know, it hasn't worked to the advantage of the Democratic supporters of John Kerry to be a deep blue state, and it hasn't worked in, I guess, the deep red states either, where people there support George Bush. This has been an interesting election cycle this year. As state director of the campaign for Illinois, I don't know of a more difficult election dynamic for anybody to have to deal with than a situation where the tussle is all over the undecided voter. So if you're in a state where you're thought to be victorious from the beginning or thought to be completely written off from the beginning, neither of you are getting any attention or any resources to work with. So your supporters are feeling very neglected this year. You know, Illinois voters are accustomed to being stroked a lot more than this, and accustomed to having people come and ask for their support in a more affirmative way than this. And this whole contest is over the undecided voter.
Last summer, I know you want to get to Scott. Last summer, I was at a White House picnic, and I said to the president, "Boy, I sure hope you'll come to Peoria. I hope you'll come to Illinois." And he said, "If you put Illinois in play, I'll be there." But, I mean, they knew then, just from their polling, and that's when, right after the election, I was at the White House in the company of the president. He said, "How did we do in your area?" And he won my area with 56%. He said, "Yeah, but I got killed in Chicago 5-1. That was like a month or two after he was sworn in. They knew back then where they were going to be campaigning. So that's what it's all about.
But the interesting thing is that Illinois doesn't swing to the blue side by all that much. In 2000, Gore took 55% of the vote. It's not much, but it's enough, given the larger context in the Electoral College, for Illinois to not be as ripe a target for campaign activity as some of the other states.
Professor Altausi, what is it that's motivating Illinois voters to support Kerry this time around versus another candidate for this race?
Well, the polls that have been done in-state echo the same findings that the polls around the country are showing, that Bush supporters like Bush for the kind of leader that he is, and Kerry supporters, many of them like Kerry for the leadership qualities that he brings, but the larger portion is a vote against the incumbent president.
I have to disagree a little bit with some of what's been said here with Representative LaHood. I think there has been some demographic change, for example, but I think that what's really driving a lot of the long-term change in the Northeast and the Midwest is really the effects of globalization, the economic pressures that it has generated. I think that in these areas, and the trend toward the Democrats has begun about the same time these economic pressures have begun to squeeze the middle class, and I think the fact of the matter is that they tend to resonate, the themes of the Democrats tend to resonate with these voters that are being squeezed. I think you've got two different reactions to, when I look at the effects of globalization, I look back to the latter part of the 19th century, look at the effect that the Industrial Revolution had upon voters and how it separated the country. And I think that the more evangelical, the evangelical component of the Republican base in the North, in the South, and the West is kind of resonating more to the moral themes that the Republicans are articulating, where you've got a little different reaction in the more secular base of the Democratic Party. So I don't buy the demographics argument, because you see in a vast area of the country the same shift. And I don't necessarily buy the short-term argument that reflect in the polls, because you've seen this going on for almost 20 years now.
Is there, Ms. Lavelle, is there a key mover or shaker in the Democratic Party in Illinois anymore? I mean, is it our governor? Is it Mayor Daley that is pulling a magnet for these Democratic voters?
I think that there are several key figures, but I don't think there is one. I think probably the most powerful Democratic figure in the party is Speaker Madigan.
And you see him pulling together the Democrats and...
Well, you know, the reality is Speaker Madigan has a core organization that is very successful, and he really focuses on his state races. So it isn't as much about a presidential election contest as it is about maintaining a strong Democratic base, and that pulls along the presidential candidate here.
Professor Althaus, help us here, because a lot of voters are going, Kerry's going to win. Barack Obama is probably going to win in Illinois. Most congressmen like this one are going to be reelected in Illinois, if not all of them in Illinois. Why vote?
Oh, well, it's because what happens at the top of the ticket is not all that happens on Election Day. And there are lots of races all around the state, local and otherwise, that are going to be of great concern for the future of this state. We've got a Supreme Court race that's hotly contested right now, and we have a variety of races all around in our local areas that are extremely important for people to show up and vote.
But the voter himself or herself is pulled to the poll primarily by what's at the top of the ticket. Is that true?
There is a certain percentage of people that show up on presidential years but don't tend to vote on non-presidential election years. But it's still the case that people who are pulled to the polls are pulled for a variety of reasons, and it's not just the top of the ticket that does that.
Representative LaHood, what do you read into the increased voter registration that I tend to see, especially in Champaign County, where I've seen 30% increase? I assume that's happening in many other counties in Illinois. What do you read into that in terms of the voter, your constituents throughout Illinois?
Well, there's been a lot of effort on the part of both parties to register people, been a lot of efforts on the part of some organizations to get nationally to get young people to vote. Just before I came to the studio, I was with a group of U of I students that are taking a political science class, and I talked with them and I asked them who they were going to vote for. They're all registered and they all claim they're going to vote. If young people come out and vote, it will turn the election. There's no question about it. But they have a very abysmal record of voting. If they come out and vote in large numbers, it'll be the first time that it happens in a presidential campaign. They can change the course of the campaign in terms of who will win. So there's been a lot of effort by the political organizations, political parties, unions, senior citizen groups, and a national organization to get young people to vote. If all these new people come out and vote, it'll have an effect on the election.
Professor Narduli, that's got to be good for the political process to have higher turnout.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think the young voters, you're right, have not, since 1972, I think they turned out, and they just kind of stayed home since then. Really very low rates.
Sort of has the feel of the 1972 movement, if you will, I was a student here at that time, but, you know, there are young people now who are very, very, very familiar with people who are serving in the armed forces. So, you know, it's not a distant thing to them. No. This is something that is visceral to them with respect to there's a war going on, people I know are serving. So that's a motivator. That's a powerful motivator. And I think there have been some fairly successful, although not major league successful, efforts to motivate young voters. Mm-hmm. I remember in 92, MTV started Rock the Vote. And Rock the Vote did a fairly good job of mobilizing the youth voter and making people recognize that this is a force that if you pay some direct attention to, you can get some results out of. So this has been a much more concerted effort, and it's been multicultural. Rock the Vote was largely aimed at white youth. This is a multicultural youth vote initiative that's going on right now. And these are the kids who are not going to show up in any polls because they're newly registered. These are the young people who walk around with cell phones in their pockets and they don't have wall phones. So they're not going to show up in any polls. So this is sort of the stealth factor in this election, and nobody really knows what to expect from them with respect to how this is going to come out and have an influence on the electoral process.
I would say the young people are motivated in Illinois by the campaign of Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. Many of these people, young people that I spoke with this evening, almost to a person, said they were going to vote for him, and even some who said they were going to vote for Bush. They like him. He has appeal. He has star power. And if young people come out and vote in Illinois, it will be in large part, I think, because of his candidacy and the way he's conducted himself.
Illinois politics sure has gotten interesting since this Senate race earlier this year. Professor Althaus, is there anything that again, the voter should look at because of that change in the Republican Party and what the Republicans did with bringing Alan Keyes in that will affect the rest of the ticket? I mean, does that race in itself and more people, say, voting for Barack Obama affect anything else in the race?
Well, for the typical Republican voter, there's two strikes against him this time around. It looks like the state's going to go to Kerry, and it looks like the Senate race is going to go to Obama. And so that is a potential demobilization of Republican voters that I think Republicans like Representative LaHood around the state are going to be a little bit concerned about to make sure that that doesn't happen. But I also want to return to the point about the youth vote. One of the things that has failed to motivate young people despite MTV and these other campaigns is that political campaigns themselves at the presidential level don't target their advertising or their campaign messages to young people in particular. That is, they haven't until this election. And in combination with the war in Iraq and some other larger concerns that are getting young people more interested in the world around them today, we may see something really different this year than we have in previous years from young voters.
Another thing I would point out about the youth vote that I think gets too often overlooked is that, particularly if you look nationwide, I mean, there's been a resurgence among Republican youth votes and Republican organizations on campuses. Not, I think there's often a tendency to think that if you're young, you're going to go with the Democrats, but it's really, I think, not the case.
Is that spillover from the Reagan years, or...?
I think there's a whole lot of factors going on that most of them don't really remember Reagan. I guess I don't know what it is. I think part of it might be the Social Security issue. That might be that would be the one thing I would put my finger on.
But I don't feel like the youth vote is any more monolithic than the African-American vote or the white vote. So I think that nobody should assume that all these young voters are going to come out and go in any one direction or another. Right. They have their own minds. These are young people who've probably been exposed to much, much more of the world as they grew up and came to voting age than any of us had ever been exposed to. So I think they've got more information at their fingertips to make an informed decision.
I want to remind our viewers tonight that if you're interested in joining our discussion, you can pick up your telephone and dial 217-333-3495. The number at the bottom of your screen. Again, your chance to talk about the presidential race, perhaps a little bit from an Illinois perspective. Representative LaHood, any reason that you or Illinois should be concerned that because the president and Senator Kerry are bypassing Illinois, that after the election, they'll also bypass Illinois?
Well, as long as Speaker Hastert's where he's at, I think Illinois will get plenty of as much attention as we need. And as long as some of us are serving in positions, including myself and Senator Durbin, who's now a senior senator, Illinois will get the kind of attention that it needs to solve problems, to get people to work together. You know, one of the things that we do in our delegation, we meet on the third Thursday of each month for lunch. We set our politics at the door, and we meet together as a delegation, and we talk about what's good for Illinois and how we solve problems in Illinois. And having Speaker Hastert from Illinois is about the best you can get, because he cares about the state, not just his own district, not just Chicago, but about the whole state. He's been very helpful to the
state. And I can say in truth that our delegation is an incredibly effective delegation, party affiliation aside, and it doesn't matter what the president has been. I worked with Mayor Daley, and I was a part of his administration when we would come to present to the delegation breakfast. And whatever concerns the city and the state brought to Washington, they got the utmost attention from every member of this delegation. Ray LaHood has been very effective there, and I spent a lot of time in Ray LaHood's office talking to him about issues that were important to Chicago and important to universities and medical centers and things like that. And we always got that level of attention from the delegation. So politics really did not matter once our delegation got elected.
Professor Althaus, Illinoisans, for the most part, have been saved from watching campaign commercials this year compared to the rest of the country. Is that a good thing?
Well, some people think it's a good thing. I think the not-so-good part of it is that campaign commercials are meant to reach voters who aren't paying a lot of attention to the campaign. They're not watching the news. They're not picking up the newspaper. And while a lot of people like to talk about how negative the advertisement often is, it is also the case that there's a lot of policy information and a lot of issue information about where the candidates stand that come through these commercials. So in the state of Illinois, for most of the state, we're missing out on that. Probably the St. Louis market, which reaches into the southwestern part of the state, voters down there are getting more information about the presidential campaigns. But this is an important thing that campaign advertising does, but it's often overlooked by people who complain about the negative.
I was going to say, the newspaper and television industry has to be a little upset that the presidential campaigns aren't spending their money here.
Yes.
And frankly, Barack Obama seems to be the only Senate candidate that's dropping money in Illinois. Is that true?
Yeah. I've only seen Obama commercials.
Well, in southern Illinois, they're spending $5 million, the lion's share of it, on probably St. Louis television and television to attract people to vote for one or the other of the Supreme Court candidates. So there is money being spent. You know, it was mentioned that Speaker Madigan is targeting his money. In the city of Peoria, we have one of the most contested House races.
Rick
and
Sloan.
Yeah, exactly. Rick Sloan and Aaron Schock and Speaker Madigan and Tom Cross are both spending a lot of money. So on some of these less noted races that aren't at the top of the ticket, there is a lot of money being spent.
You know what, though? And this is something that you wouldn't expect somebody in politics to say. The problem with political ads is that there is no truth filter. You know, so it's not like people are necessarily missing out on so much policy. They're missing out on each other's spin on particular issues. And then it is up to the voter, to be an informed voter, to hear these commercials, hear both sides of this, and then go figure out the truth.
In the media, to some point, has done fact-checking with some of the commercials,
but
since
not enough.
We don't see the commercials, we only don't see the follow-up on them, too. I mean, the Swift boat ad that it got so much press, again, many Illinoisans never saw the ad.
And probably for our benefit, I think. But it is true that, at least with the presidential campaign ads, they're going to be factually accurate for the most part. There may be a question about whether they're conveying all the context that many voters want to see. And for that reason, it is very important for all of us to go and check up on these things. And fortunately, there are websites like Project Vote Smart at www.vote-smart.org that are nonpartisan, non-ideological, just out there to provide a lot of information that voters need to make good decisions.
There are so many polls that people can see in the newspaper and in television and on the internet today. The fact that John Kerry leads in Illinois 52-40 or 53-41 or something like that in the latest polls, is there any kind of a demoralizing effect on a Republican, say, to go, the polls show I don't need to even go?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any degree that polls do that?
People aren't motivated to go to the poll, go to vote by polls. They're motivated by issues, by their belief in a particular candidate, by a philosophical point of view. Polls are not going to drive people away. Polls don't increase or lower the attendance at the voting booth. I think philosophy, issues, a passion to elect the highest elected person in the country, irrespective of whether they're going to win the state or not. So those are the things that I think motivate people, particularly in a presidential year.
Yeah, I would also add here that as we saw in 2000, you know, a lot of people aren't even aware the Electoral College exists, and a lot of people don't understand that even though they're in a state, Illinois, that is going to the Democrats, that they shouldn't vote anyway because they're a committed Republican. So, I mean, it may have a somewhat of a dampening effect, but I don't think a huge effect. I'm going to also get back to this issue of ads and campaigning. I think the impact of those on the vote is greatly exaggerated, and I think it's been perpetuated by political consultants. I think far more important, if you look over time, is the effect of stewardship of the incumbent, inflation, particularly relevant for the Republican base, unemployment, growth, crime, war and peace. Over time, these have had a really profound effect on both the nation, the state vote, and even the local votes. And I think they far overshadow the impact of campaigning, and I think that's a good thing for democracy, because it would be discouraging to me if, in fact, the vote was driven by these inane commercials and the fact that, that somebody who we hadn't seen in 4 years stopped in to say hi.
Let me get along. We do have three callers patiently waiting. Let's jump to a caller on line one. You have a question or comment for our experts here tonight talking about the presidential race. Go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering, why haven't we heard anything about the gas prices that are pretty well killing everybody? And with us going into winter, I would think that that would be something that they'd want to bring out and to discuss, and I think that might help one of the candidates if they did.
Okay, well, let's ask one of the people first from the Bush campaign. Is that an issue that could be addressed by the candidates?
As I've been out and around the 20 counties that I represent and other places in the state, gas prices are an issue that a lot of people are talking about. People, I think, are astounded that gas prices are now over $2 a gallon. They want to know why politicians aren't doing something about it, and I've tried to explain what we're trying to do about it. It is an issue, really. I think both candidates have talked about it to a lesser extent, probably, than maybe the war and some of these other issues. But it is an issue, particularly in congressional races, in the Senate race, and in some of these other races around the country, but probably not as much in the presidential race because of the war.
You agree with that, Ms. Will?
I think it goes back to what Congressman LaHood said earlier. There are political consultants and there are pollsters who are talking to people on a regular basis, some selected group of people, and we don't necessarily know who they are overall, but they've sampled all across the country, and people tell them what are the top issues. And so the approaches that are made to the voters are based on what these people say are the top issues. And the concern about security, the concern about the economy, these are things that are driving people much more, the war. Those are the issues that the candidates are addressing because that is what they're getting in terms of feedback from the voters on the issues that they think are the most important. So although gas prices are important, if they're not in that top two or three or four issues, they're not going to be addressed in this national
campaign. Scott, is that a change in the way politics is run, that consultants are telling the politicians what to do, or has it been that way?
Well, it's not that consultants are telling the politicians what issues to take positions on, but rather among the issues that a politician is already concerned about, the polling can help to direct the campaign to understand better which of those issues that people are more concerned about. And so it's an easier process to communicate information about something that people are already interested in than to try to convince them that it's important to be concerned about something that may interest academics, but the average person has better things to do.
Gas prices is something we can all talk about. I don't know a lot of things.
The other thing, I think the caller's question misses the point a little bit in the sense that you're right that the candidates are not talking much about it, and it would really be good if they laid out their different positions. But the fact of the matter is that increasing gas prices, like the flu episode, the lack of vaccinations, these are things that affect voters, and even though people are not talking about it, it's going to reflect on the incumbent stewardship. So in some ways, people don't need to be cued all the time. If their core desires are being impinged on by these developments, they will react to it.
Let me tell you this. If it wasn't for the war and the emphasis on the war, we'd be talking, John Kerry would be talking about our reliance on Saudi Arabia and Middle East oil as long as the day is long. And there was a campaign when Jimmy Carter was running for re-election that went after Tip O'Neill, painting him driving in a great big car because gas prices were so high. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a war going on. It's an issue, but it's not one of the things that people are really thinking about as they go to the polls here in a few days.
Okay, let's move on to another caller. Line 2 in Bloomington, you have a question for us tonight. Go ahead.
Yes, you mentioned earlier the 1972 youth vote, and wasn't that the year the voting age changed? Wasn't that the first year 18-year-olds could vote?
Yes.
Okay,
and
well, we'll...
Since we have a war, do you see any similarities between this period and that?
Okay, thanks for your question. I'll ask the political scientist here.
Yes, 1972 was the first year that 18-year-olds could vote, but what we saw in the overall turnout for that year was a decline, in part because young people vote at lower rates than older people. Voting is a habit, like drinking coffee, and those of us who drink coffee for many years look forward to that morning cup, but when we're just starting out, we we may not miss it so much. And so voter turnout among young people was fairly low starting then, and it hasn't really changed a whole lot since then at the national level. But this is a year that we have issues that are really driving concern among young people, and one of the things that many young people seem to be concerned about is the potential resurgence of a military draft, which neither candidate is suggesting, but I think that many young people are putting together the pieces of the puzzle and looking at the world situation. They're concerned about the future.
Is there any similarities, Professor Naduli, between 72 and now?
I think the big difference is the lack of a draft. I think if there was a draft, you would see, and that's why Charlie Rangel, I think, put the issue on the table. I think that would mobilize young voters, but the fact that it's not here is probably going to depress their turnout a little bit.
Since we touched on the draft, Congressman Wood, are you hearing that from constituents at all, the rumors, the talk of a possible draft or not?
Well, a little bit, because the candidates have talked about it, and the House actually voted 400-2 against the implementation of a draft, and the President can't really implement a draft anyway. The Congress has to pass it, but a little bit.
Not really an issue.
Not really.
Okay. Let's go to another caller on line 3 in Moequa, Illinois. You have a question or comment. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. With the way the primary system is set up, that those seem to be over by Super Tuesday, and with the polling data leading the candidates to really only campaign in maybe 20 states, rapidly coming down to 10, do the panelists see any way to make the election more of a national event to see if we can develop more of a broad-based support for our candidates?
All right. Thank you for your question. Again, we'll turn to the political scientists.
I think we have to give some serious thought in the coming years to changing the process by which we select presidential candidates. I think that the low participation in the primaries and the fact that the more extreme component parts of each party's electoral base turns out and then develop some momentum, I think is leaving a lot of people, I think, unrepresented. And I think that there's probably a, David Brooks, who was here last night, talked about this big mid part of the middle section of the electorate. It was not really represented very well. And I think that we need to experiment and think about, have a dialogue about how we can change that, whether we would go back to a convention system that we had before the primaries, or some type of a multi-runoff national primary.
Conventions are very anticlimactic anymore. There's not that big roll call and counting of votes. And
I think it would be good to be able to hold party delegates more responsible for the candidates for the party's nominations, which they really aren't now. It's really vested in a small part of the electorate. And I think that if you could somehow transform that, you might have generate candidates that more people were happy with.
Would it make any difference, Congressman Lahood, to move the Illinois primary closer to the fall election?
Well, we might see a few of the candidates come around, but let's face it, they're going to spend most of their time in New Hampshire and South Carolina and some of these early primary states, Iowa. That's where they get the big mo. That's where they get the launch that really launches them.
Would it help Illinois to move earlier?
I just think that these early primaries are so set in stone, it's going to be difficult, even if you moved our primary, to become a factor.
And there is an important downside of a nationalized primary system. It's going to increase the role of money in politics, because in order to make a showing of any sort, you have to be able to run a simultaneous campaign across a large number of states. And that would put out of the running people like Bill Clinton or Jimmy Carter, who were able to capitalize on that momentum and build a national constituency out of a campaign that didn't have a lot going for it. In the general election, there is a way that has been thrown around to try to nationalize things a little bit more, and that is to encourage states to change their electoral college allocation from a winner-takes-all system to a more a proportional system. For instance, the state of Maine allocates its electoral college votes by the congressional district and who wins in each of the congressional districts. The possible downside of that is that we might see even more targeting at a lower level, not just in certain states, but now in certain media markets that have a lot of voters. At the same time, it could encourage a more national-based campaign, because it's more efficient to reach.
But see, I think that would be a good thing. I think that targeting at a more local level gets to the issue of motivating voters at a more local level, as opposed to this pick out 11 or 18 battleground states and forget about the rest of the country. I think this whole issue of fighting over electoral votes, in a sense, almost disenfranchises the whole principle of one person, one vote in the United States. It doesn't make sense that you can win the popular vote yet lose the election.
You know, Professor Narduli, Americans must be getting used to the fact that elections are going to be close. We did it in 2000. It appears it will be this way next Tuesday.
Yes.
Why is that? Why are we, like, always having close elections? Or maybe the only two elections isn't always, but it
it really isn't always. And it's been at the presidential level. They've been close for a couple campaigns, but really, if you looked at the congressional level, they're not very close. That a lot of the state level elections are not close at the beneath the presidential level. So I think there's nothing the electorate can do about it. I mean, I think that will motivate. I think this is why we're probably going to see a little higher turnout, particularly in the battleground states. They're talking about a 75% turnout in Florida. Now, I'd be surprised if we got much more than 50% in Illinois, but it's hard to say. But we might get up to 55% at the nation.
Last time around, the Ralph Nader candidacy did make a difference in who won the presidency. Do you see the Ralph Nader candidacy or other third-party candidacies being a factor next Tuesday?
I think he's going to get less than 1% of the vote, is my guess. I think when people get into the a voting booth and they realize, I mean, I think that the 2000 experience has been really underscored in the minds of a lot of people, and I just don't think they're going to throw away their vote this year. In fact, some of the figures I've looked at, and Scott can correct me here, but it seems like there are some Bush voters that are unhappy with Bush. They can't vote for Kerry, but they might be going into the Nader column, even though ideologically it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But I've seen a couple of polls where without Nader on the ballot, Bush actually has a point or two more.
Let's talk for a little bit from a national scope here. Are Florida, Pennsylvania, and Ohio the states that are going to determine this presidency or not?
Well, among the states that are remaining that the polls are just too close to tell who's likely to win, those are the big three states. There are a lot of other small states, total of 9 or 10, depending on who's counting. States are really up for grabs, and another 6 or 7 are probably leaning one way or another, but it's still hard to tell. And one of the challenges with the pre-election polling this year is that it is based on two factors. One is making sure that one side is ahead or not. To the extent that you run out of those margins of errors, you can be more confident that your prediction is accurate. We're within the margins of errors on almost all of the swing states right now. The other thing is that pre-election polling is based on the assumption that things this election are going to be pretty much like they were in the last election, the election before that. And as we've been talking about this evening, things are not the same this year as they have been before. So it becomes more difficult to tell how these things are all going to break.
What about the voting process itself? You know, we had all these chads and things we'd never heard of before 4 years ago that we now find ourselves, some of us, looking for the back of this little thing we vote on. Will that process, has it changed enough that we won't have those types of things next Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and for 34 days or however many days it was?
I think you'll have some because in the aftermath of the 2000 election, Congress, as you know, passed HAVA, the Help America Vote Act, which is a pool of federal resources that goes to cities and counties, municipalities, to enable them to modernize their voting systems. And a lot of the municipalities and counties have taken advantage of that money. So they have bought new equipment, and I think that for the most part they're going to be trying this stuff out in this election cycle. And it will be bumpy, perhaps, so it may be a different type of issue as opposed to hanging chads. But I think overall there will still be some of the same issues.
Congressman LaHood, you talked early on about the changing geography of Illinois, and especially mm-hmm. DuPage County. How else has Illinois changed from your perspective in terms of politics and typical regions in the collar counties and downstate? And has anything else evolved besides DuPage County?
A lot of people have moved out of the state. At one time, we had 24 congressmen determined by the population of the state. Today, we have 19. Those people that have moved, I think you could probably look at the demographics and think of them as pretty traditional conservative Republicans who've gone to the warmer climates. That's why Arizona picked up 2 seats, mm-hmm. Florida picked up 3 seats, Texas picked up 4 or 5 seats. People are moving out of the state as they retire, and they want to go to Nevada or warmer climates, and I think those have been traditional Republicans. I also think we have 2 states. We have the state above Interstate 80 and the state below Interstate 80. And the demographics are different. The philosophies are different.
But hasn't it always been that way, back to the first Mayor Daley's days, that there was a different state north of I-80?
I don't quite agree with that, because I think we've seen over time that we've had Republican and Democratic people in governor, secretary of state, and going way back, you think of somebody like Senator Dirksen or Senator Percy, who were able to win the state. I think things have changed. Divisions have occurred over time as a result of issues and philosophies, and frankly, I think we are a divided state.
But there are still some important myths about the way that Illinois residents vote that I think we need to help clear. And one of them is that Cook County and the Collars, well, Cook County goes Democratic, the Collars go Republican, the rest of the state leans Republican. The truth is that when you factor out the Collar counties in Cook, the rest of the state broke at about 51% for Gore in 2000. There's a lot of Republican votes, but there's a lot of Democratic votes as well. I'm sorry, 51% for Bush in 2000. Within the Collar counties and Cook, the break was 36-37% for Bush. It's interesting, though, that even in Cook County, which we typically think of as rigidly Democratic, there are just as many Republican votes out of that 2000 election for George Bush as there were in all the Collar counties combined. So, yes, it's true that proportionally, Cook County leans Democratic, but there are a lot of people that live there and a lot of people that vote in different ways. And downstate, whether it's the 80 divide or it's a different divide, it doesn't break as cleanly as many people think.
Has Peoria County held its ground, or has it changed?
Peoria County carried for Vice President Gore by a very, very slim plurality. The region of central Illinois, which is Peoria, Tazewell, Woodford, Marshall, carried for the president with about 56%. But actually, Peoria County carried for Gore the last time.
Let me get to another caller here. We have callers patiently waiting. Line one in Normal, you have a question? Go ahead.
Yes, I see in the Sunday paper every Sunday of how the lawmakers voted. And I always wondered is why they missed so many votes.
Why they missed so many votes?
Yes, it's either yes or no, but then there's a blank space there.
Well,
they missed more than they cast.
We'll ask one of the politicians here at the table.
Well, voting is very important. It's one of the most important jobs that we have as members of Congress or members of the United States Senate or members of the Illinois General Assembly. That's why people elect us. I think for the most part, our delegation pays pretty close attention to their voting records. I have about a 95% voting record, but sometimes if you have to attend a funeral, sometimes if you have to get if you get sick, you're going to miss a vote. Trying to maintain a 100% voting record is silly. It's impossible to do. But having about 95, 96, 98% is reasonable, and I think that's what people expect. When you drop below 90, then I think people begin to wonder where you're at. The excuses probably drop off after that.
Okay, well, let's move to another caller, line 5 in Urbana. You have a question tonight for our guests.
Yes, good evening. I'd like to know opinion of your guests as to why so many supporters of President Bush still believe that 9/11 was caused by Saddam Hussein, and that weapons of mass destruction existed in Iraq, when all the evidence so far, or the preponderance of evidence, say just the opposite, including the 9/11 Commission, and including the report from the weapons inspectors.
Okay, well, let's get the answer. Thanks for your call tonight.
Well,
Representative Lewitt.
Look, and I'm on the Intelligence Committee. I've been on the committee for 6 years. Senator Edwards is on the Senate Intelligence Committee. We all looked at the same information. We all looked at the same photographs. We all looked at the same intelligence reports. And it appeared to the President, to the Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State, Senator Kerry, Senator Edwards, Ray LaHood, and others, that there were weapons of mass destruction. We saw pictures where we thought there were weapons. the weapons inspectors that had been in there felt that there were the opportunities and that there clearly were things there that would lead them to believe there were weapons of mass destruction. That's why Senator Kerry voted for the resolution to allow the president to go to war. That's why the UN voted 16-0. Now, hindsight is 20/20. Hindsight is a beautiful thing, and it's a great thing. Now we know, after the weapons inspector had been in there for more than 3.5 years, that all we have found are the different components, but we really haven't found the weapons. But when those of us were considering resolutions and considering information and considering intelligence, including Senator Kerry and Senator Edwards, we felt there were weapons of mass destruction. And that's where the truth is.
Do you believe that's the answer?
Well, I think my problem with this whole thing is that even in hindsight, President Bush refuses to acknowledge that mistakes were made or that he could have dealt with things differently. If he had slowed down a little bit and let the United Nations, let the NATO rather do its work and let the inspectors do a little bit more investigation. I think it's a problem to say, I was absolutely right, even in the face of incontrovertible evidence. It's okay to be wrong, but you have to acknowledge when you're wrong and acknowledge that maybe I should have done something differently.
Let's catch one more caller, line 4 in Urbana. You have a question or comment tonight.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I resent the fact of censorship of those prisoners of war, people who didn't want them to talk. It's so cruel. The American people should wake up.
And your question is what? Do you have a question for us?
Should that program been aired?
Which program?
That program about the Swift Boat veterans.
Okay.
I think the caller may be referring to a program that was aired on Sinclair-owned broadcast television stations, and we have one in our local market here. It was a controversial program to air. It aired last Friday, I believe. And there are changes in ownership of television stations that have been underway for several years, and some owners are becoming a little more interested in telling people about political matters that interest them. So that was the reason that Sinclair did this. They suffered a bit in the court of public opinion for doing so, and it's not at all clear that this would have a big impact one way or another, since it's a fairly small number of stations across the nation that had this.
And in fact, they suffered in Wall Street, too.
Yes, they did.
Their stock fell a little
bit.
Let's
get back to
Professor
Narduli, the previous question I don't think we answered appropriately, because I think the question was not were any of the candidates or the actors right, but why, after all of the evidence that has unfolded since the decision was made to go to war, why have voters not changed, why have they updated their beliefs about the existence of weapons of mass destruction? And I think the reason there is that it happens on both sides. Hardcore partisans tend to filter out on both sides bad news that is inconsistent with their beliefs, and I think that's an unhealthy situation when people can't update and still believe that something, even though there's pretty strong evidence that it does not exist, and it's not just, it might be Republicans in this particular case, but it's certainly Democrats in other cases where they just filter out anything that's inconsistent with their partisan leanings.
And doesn't that then make people who support the troops feel like they are somehow being disloyal to the troops by accepting information that could nullify the reason why they went over there in the first place?
That may or may not be true, but I don't think that would account for why people, why Republicans more than Democrats are resisting to changing their beliefs about the existence of weapons of mass destruction.
But on the link between Saddam and 9/11, it's not very well known, but there was a poll that was done 3 days after the 9/11 attacks that found 80% of Americans were willing to believe that Saddam Hussein was behind those attacks. That number has been dropping ever since, steadily. And in fact, it was was a higher number before the Bush administration began talking about the potential need to use military force against Iraq. The percentage that believed Saddam was behind 9/11 was lower after that information came out through the administration. So I think we're seeing a public that's correcting itself, but it takes us a while to get caught up with all of the facts that are pertinent in this case.
Congressman LaHood, if you're a betting man and you're going to the windows in Vegas, is there any surprise in Illinois anywhere next week? Do you see any surprise anywhere at the presidential, at the U.S. Senate, at the congressional level, anywhere in Illinois, potential surprises? Something you might place
really,
a bet
on? Yeah, I really don't. I think all of the current sitting members, both Democrats and Republicans, Congress people will be reelected, and I think what we've talked about in terms of presidential and Senate, U.S. senatorial will be borne out. Some of these local races, there'll be surprises, but your viewers, aren't going to...
Professor Althaus, how about you? Do you see any surprises in Illinois next week?
Well, there could be some surprises depending on what happens in the rest of the Electoral College. Illinois could suddenly come into play if, for instance, there were a tie in the Electoral College. There are several states like ours that have are likely to vote popularly towards Kerry, but have a congressional representation that is Republican. And so we could see some interesting issues arising if the election were thrown to the House of Representatives and to have some challenges come out in that way. But I agree with Representative LaHood. I think for the big ticket races that are the object of a lot of news attention today, things are likely to proceed as we've thought. However, it's true that Bush has been gaining in the polls with Kerry in the state of Illinois. There's still about an 8 percentage point gap there, but there is some movement.
Ms. Lavella, do you see any surprises anywhere? I've heard some people say if there's a surprise anywhere, it's that Keyes will get a better vote than people expect.
I think the surprise will be Melissa Bean defeating Phil Crane.
You think that's possible?
I do.
Do you see that possibility?
I don't at this point.
Professor Narduli, do you see any surprises in Illinois next week?
No, except I would agree with Scott that if, in fact, there is a tie in the Electoral College, I think there'll be a number of people surprised, not just in this state, but in about 8 other states in which the state delegations voting along partisan lines will overturn the popular majority in their state and cast a ballot for the state, cast the state's ballot for a member of the opposition party. And there'll be four states which Republicans will win, and they have a Democratic delegations that will overturn this popular vote as well.
As we watch election coverage on election night, is there going to be any difference in the way the media covers things this year because of 4 years ago? Do you see that changing?
Oh, yes. They're going to be much more circumspect than they were 4 years ago. They are going to wait and wait and wait, no matter what the exit polls happen to say. But it is important to point out that it's not clear what sort of impact a call one way or another would have. Jimmy Carter conceded the election in 1980 before the polls had closed on the West Coast, but it didn't appear to have changed anything out there. But I think we are going to see a much more subdued Dan Rather this year than we had before.
Do you see that too? Do you think there'll be
absolutely.
The media will be back off a little bit?
Absolutely. I think they got burned very badly. They know they got burned. They Avis knows this. They like to be perfect. Mm-hmm. And they were imperfect the last time, and they know
they
it.
They were terribly embarrassed
right.
the last
That's
time.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
And you think the voter will be more cautious and paying attention to what they say when they say we project West Virginia to do this? They go, well, maybe, maybe not.
Oh, yeah. I think the voters really went through a roller coaster on the last cycle. And so I think they're going to wait until it is a final decision, not pay attention so much to this exit polling. And I think they're going to be a lot more careful with exit polling on the side of the media.
Let me ask, as we get down to the very close here of the show, I would kind of project who you think will win the presidential race. Mr. Bush?
Nationwide?
Yeah.
Yes, I believe the president will win re-election.
Mr. Kerry?
Of course I believe Mr. Kerry.
I kind of expected that. Professor Althaus?
It is anybody's guess at this point.
And would you agree with that, Professor Narduli? Or?
Yes. I mean, I think that no one really knows. I think if I look at both the long-term forces and the short-term forces, I think they favor the Democrats. But the balance is so narrow that a point shift here or there could make an enormous difference. And the other thing is, it could, if there is in fact a 2 or 3 point shift that's pretty uniform, which has been happening a lot over the past 30 years, I mean, in the Electoral College, the race may not be as close as we think. I mean, it's conceivable to me that one candidate or the other could end up with well over 300 Electoral College votes. But it's just as conceivable that they could both end up with 269.
Actually, it's going to boil down to the Washington Redskins game on Sunday, I hear.
That's right.
Is that correct? If the
right.
Redskins win on Sunday, the incumbent president will be reelected. Is that the way it works?
No, I think the received wisdom is the taller candidate usually wins. I don't know how well that works.
Well, and I've also heard the candidate with more syllables in his last name has won 70% of the time. That's the way it works. Thank you very much to our guests tonight, especially to those who traveled some distance to get here tonight through the fog. We want to thank Congressman Ray LaHood from Peoria, Avis Lavelle from the Kerry campaign driving from Chicago tonight. Professor Peter Narduli is here from the University of Illinois. Thank you for joining us tonight. And Scott Althaus is here too. Althaus is here from the University of Illinois Department of Political Science. And again, thanks to you for being here tonight and for watching By the People over the last 6 weeks leading up to election night. We hope you've become a better informed voter that will take that knowledge with you to the voting booth on next Tuesday. We also want to remind you that if you need more about the races and the candidates, you can visit the WILL website at will.uiuc.edu to listen to archived interviews with the candidates and find other election 2004 information. We hope you'll remember to vote, just like everybody else has been telling you. Have a good night and a great weekend.